If I say there is hope for a complete recovery for people with a concussion, you say
100%.
And in fact, you didn't only feel it, you were outside the regular medical system because they were not interested in you.
Neuroplasticity actually opens you up to the world, makes it possible to develop, make it possible to rehabilitate.
Traumatic brain injury has been caused a silent epidemic for that reason, because it consists of changes and disabilities that are not obvious to other people.
If, as a physician, you felt you had nothing to offer a patient, then I think ethically you need to say, I don't think there's anything I can offer you. Maybe you should see Dr. M.
Historically, we have called these things mild traumatic brain injuries, which implies that, well, it may be a brain injury, but it's not going to have great consequence, right? And that's frankly not true.
Welcome to Concussion Stories, a live Yana podcast series filled with hope. I'm here to let you know that you are not alone in your post-concussion recovery journey. My name is Melanie, and I spent 6.5 years learning, experimenting, and training in order to find a way to heal myself from post-concussion syndrome. After making a full recovery by the end of 2018, I embarked on this mission to make the recovery journey easier for you. This is why I started this podcast, wrote detailed blog posts and downloadable guides, offer coaching, and also the course that I wish I had back when I was recovering, teaching you everything that I needed to know in order to make my recovery happen. On Concussion Stories, we dig deep while discussing hopeful stories of recovery, as well as the hard stuff in the messy middle. Let's dive right in. In this second episode with Erik Thalin, a Swedish brain injury researcher and resident physician at Karolinska University Hospital, we will cover how he is developing a checklist for Swedish GPs to help them know better what to do with patients after sustaining a concussion. He also shares and explains the way sport concussion return to activity protocols are helpful to apply in medical settings too. By the way, if you hear Erik speak about mild traumatic brain injury, this is just a term doctors often use for concussion. Without further ado, let's listen to Erik Thalin. If I understood you correctly in Antwerp, you also said that you are going to write guidelines based on this, right?
That is correct. So we're currently updating the guidelines for the management of mild traumatic brain injury patients or concussion patients in Stockholm with lingering symptoms. Okay. And we're writing them to inform the GP I don't know what's called in the Netherlands, but in Sweden we call them like house doctors. And we try to give them like a manual, a sort of flow chart. If a patient has persistent headaches, where should I refer them? If a patient had persistent sleeping problems, persisting vertigo, so that I think that will help a lot, because it's not, I don't think it is that the GP is necessarily uninterested in your problems. I think the problem lies in that the GP is probably to some extent uninformed, because we're not getting taught anything in medical school about this. We were not taught, like, we're doing training, and it's like, you as a category of patient, you fall between the cracks, really, because you're not really a neurology, you're not really in neurosurgery, and you're not really in rehabilitation medicine. You fall somewhere in between, which makes it very difficult. And I think another thing that we need to think about is that not everything requires doctors. I think that for mild TBI, so concussion patients, I think that other paramedical specialties such as physiotherapists, occupational therapists can do tremendous efforts and improvement for these patients with very like small actual tools to improve health.
Yes, I fully agree. So in the end I did my recovery from home, And that's essentially also what I'm now helping people do as well through my website. And it's not like, it's, of course, it's specialized knowledge. After all these years, I've acquired so many things that work and things that don't work and everything, but still, I can just tell people what helped and what didn't help and how I did that. And they can do it from home as well. And probably a physiotherapist, for example, can be much better than I at how someone should move, specifically that person. But in the end, moving or doing brain training or meditation are in the end not things you need doctors for. So I fully agree with that. You just need to know what to do. And this whole bundle of tools and of care providers that you can go to, that is not available. And that's the thing that needs to be available at the point of entry. So the GP or at the in the ER. Those care providers need to know what to give to patients, I think. You just mentioned that at university, you weren't taught anything about mild traumatic brain injury, concussion, post-concussion syndrome. Is that true?
That is, I have to, before I don't want to lie, but I need to think, but no, I'd say that I didn't learn anything in medical school about concussion. Well, you do learn, but the thing always, the angle is always with mild traumatic brain injury is to sort of screen for those who might have a hemorrhage that requires surgery. It's always about that. And when you don't find a hemorrhage, or you sort of go through an algorithm with you probably do not have a bleed here, go home and rest for a week. Don't play video games. Don't read too many books. Don't stay up too late. Don't drink alcohol. And bye-bye. And that's about it. That's what you learn. You don't really learn what the evidence is for anything of this, or if a patient comes back to you later on, what to do. That is nothing that we are being taught, which is a shame, really.
Yes, shame, and something that absolutely needs to change, of course, after all of this information that now has been uncovered by Sender, Track, TBI. Yeah. There are two things that are really remarkable when I hear this. That the first thing is you are still quite young in the field, and you just mentioned that you learned, I heard the word rest as advice. You were taught this still at university.
Yes. So it's in the term of acute, so like the first week after you hit your head. I think I kind of know where you're heading with this, but I don't think it's necessarily bad to take it easy, like the first days after an injury, depending a little bit how hard you sustain it. Usually these patients are also maybe influenced by alcohol or like have other maybe drugs in their systems. It's always good to sort of relax the first days after an injury, but you should not be resting your way to health. This is nothing that you will rest off. You're going to have to walk and exercise it off in the long run, definitely.
Yes. Okay. So, but is this something then that you learned after university in practice, or is it something that I'm not looking to chase your university? It's something that's more like the general. I'm trying to find out, because a lot of patients still get this advice of rest. Like, how persistent is it still that our students, our medical students, are still learning this? Maybe.
Yeah. No, I think it's. I mean, consider. I think it's good to have like a tiered system, and like if you're in sports and have a concussion, there is this thing called like a ladder to get back. And first you start with like resting, but for a day maybe, and then you start with some light exercise, and then maybe you have like a 30-minute aerobic training. And then if that feels okay, you don't have any symptoms, you go up to some sort of, you start to have more heavy exercise training. And if you don't have any symptoms, then you go into some sort of contact sport again. Let's say this is hockey or soccer or something where you have that. But if you have, like, if you do feel symptoms, like you do feel more headaches, you feel more vertigo, you feel more nausea, you feel something, then you take a step back, and then you keep on that level until you feel fine in order to escalate the level of training. Yes. And I think that, like, this is quite debated. I mean, there is not perfect evidence for this, but I think it makes perfect sense to feel your own body, how much, I mean, and when the symptoms come. I'm not saying that when the symptoms come, you should go to bed and sleep for a week. But I think it's good to still acknowledge that there could be symptoms that you should listen to, not to push yourself too hard.
No, it's true. I always compare it to going to the gym. So if you're trying to build a muscle, the brain is just like it, in my experience, that at least the injured brain, also healthy brain. So if you want to train it, you want to push it a little.
Yeah.
But then release again, push it a little more and release it again. And instead of pushing through it, because you will get an injury, that's, everybody knows it.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing for your brain, I think. So you have the sports, return to sports protocols, actually. And you already say that it would be a good idea to look at that and transfer that maybe to current protocols in hospital, right? Or for a GP.
Yep.
And also, that's one thing that we can use. And also, different countries can also learn from each other.
Definitely.
And I think this would be really interesting idea. And really fast progress if we would transfer knowledge from all sides and see if it works in other countries, or see if it works in other settings, like in a hospital instead of on the field. Do you feel that this is one way to change protocols rapidly as well?
Yeah, definitely. But I think it should be acknowledged that usually when you're working with in sports, for instance, it's healthy young people. And they are different, because a majority of patients actually that have concussions today are old people. In Sweden, the median age that are being admitted to emergency rooms is like 70. So it's a problem there as well. Like, what kind of rehabilitation do we give to the elderly? And that probably needs to be a little bit different if you have an injury. And so you need to look at the patient in front of you and then tailor some sort of best practice rehabilitation protocol for that particular patient. And I do believe that for you, for instance, it would be perfect with some sort of a sports protocol and something tailored from that experience. But you should also look at a problem with sports is also that a lot of these people want to participate. I mean, they want to push themselves. They want to get out there because maybe there is money involved. There is like a career involved, that if they do show symptoms, show weakness, they will not be able to play. They will not get any money, and they will probably not come anywhere in their career of sports. But you have a better, more long-term goal. You want to get healthy, and you don't necessarily have to do it quick. You have a long game to play. So it's something that I think you can learn from that, but perhaps they need to be tweaked for the sort of normal life that people live. And it definitely needs to be tailored for the specific age group that you're in and the activity level. Perhaps even educational background and stuff like that.
Yeah, I can fully imagine. It's got quite a job you've got.
Yeah.
But I'm very confident that you will find so much information and translate it into good protocols or checklists for doctors. Now I would love to hear from you. What do you take away from this episode? Is there something that you can apply to your life right away? Head on over to lifejana.com and leave your comment now. And if you want to hear and read more concussion stories, actionable steps, and inspiration, be sure to subscribe to the Life Jana email list while you're there, so that you never miss out on new materials we constantly make for you. If you want to support this podcast, head on over to patreon.com/concussionstories. Thank you for listening to this Concussion Stories episode by Life Jana. May you be well, and may you be happy.